Good morning. We'll head to Daniel chapter 8. You know, whenever I have a thought candle, I never know if I should say anything because then I'm just coming up 5 seconds later. But what you did there was really important for the context of chapter 2, but also really encouraging for us because, you know, like you said, Paul got his gospel directly from Jesus and then meets with the apostles for the very first time, and they compare notes. And they say, well, you know, we're preaching the resurrection of Christ. They're like, okay, us too. And he's saying we're saved by our faith and not our works. And they're saying, well, us too. And he's saying that baptism in Jesus' name is for the remission of sins to receive God's Spirit. And they're saying, we're doing that too. And that's a pretty cool moment. You know, you look out into the world, think, probably around 2,000 known gods, you know, not counting the millions that get subsetted in the Hindu religion, but, you know, I mean, there's thousands of gods, you know, take your pick. And so when you say salvation is through one God and his Messiah, Jesus Christ, I mean, that narrows it down pretty quick. And so it can really feel like there's a lot of people in the world wrong. And what it does is it makes you wonder if you're right. You know, am I reading this book, you know, the right way? And so it's really encouraging when you bump into another group of people that you've never seen before, and they've come to the same conclusions because they're reading the same book, right? So pretty encouraging. That's what I really like family camp for. You know, get to meet people from all over the world, Africa, Asia, you know, different parts of the United States, and they're all following Christ in faith, and because they're all reading the same book. So that's, you know, I am really encouraged by that. So, okay, Daniel chapter 8, verse 1. In the third year of the reign of Belshazzar, king, a vision appeared to me, Daniel, subsequent to the one which appeared to me previously. So if we go back to chapter 7, remember, we're going through Daniel chronologically, best as we can. You know, today we'll thoroughly confuse you, just so you know. A lot of the things that we're going to cover in chapter 8 today are covered in chapters 11 and 12. But the events revealed in chapters 11 and 12 are revealed later, chronologically, than what we're reading in chapter 8. So we're going to go through Daniel chronologically, but the events, I mean, we're going to come back to similar events, historical prophecies. So we went through, in order to go through Daniel chronologically, chapters 1 through 4, covered Nebuchadnezzar's rule over Babylon. Now, chapter 7, verse 1, it's the first year of Belshazzar, king of Babylon. Okay? So we've moved on from Nebi to Belshazzar's reign. Chapter 7 was his first year. Chapter 8, in the third year. So we're covering the historical prophecy of the ram and the goat. And this is going to be a couple years after the vision that Daniel sees in chapter 7 of the beasts and of the horn and all that that we've covered for several months. So we read this and got through the majority of it. So let's do a little review here. Verse 2, he says, I looked in the vision while I was looking. I was in the citadel of Susa, which is in the province of Elam. And I looked in the vision, and I myself was beside the Ulai Canal. So this is not a random city. Okay, Susa will go on to become the government capital of the Persian Empire. So, you know, try to remember that South American country that's got the two capitals. What is that? Bolivia? All my high schoolers are gone. I suppose I wouldn't be upset if you had, you know, clicked on the internet and checked, but I think Bolivia's got two capitals, one historically and another one politically. So you'll notice if you know, you study out, and I haven't done this extensively, but you'll notice when you study the Babylonian and Persian. Bolivia? Yeah, okay. Sucre, I know, is one of them. and La Paz. Sucre, I think, comes through the language as sugar. But La Paz, I don't remember what that means. Anyway, so, you study these things out, and just the way that, because one of the things that we noticed was the heavy Chaldee influence in the Babylonian Empire. Remember that from the very beginning of Daniel 1, right? When Nebuchadnezzar brought the Jewish boys in, he asked them to learn the language and the arts of the Chaldeans. So you can see how there's a heavy influence of Chaldean people amongst the Babylonians, okay? All Chaldeans are Babylonians. Not all Babylonians are Chaldeans. So when you look at the way that these nations come together politically and historically, a lot of times, an old capital will remain, but a new one will come about. And so Persia is going to have a couple capitals, but it is not currently the world power at this time, right? Because this is Belshazzar, king of Babylon. So in verse 2, when Daniel is seemingly swept to this city, a citadel of Susa, that's not an accident. That city will become the government capital of Persia. Okay? So that's significant. In verse 3, I lifted up my eyes and looked, and behold, a ram which had two horns was standing in front of the canal. Now the two horns were long, but one was longer than the other, and the longer one coming up last. So we've got horns, which are likely a symbol of power. Okay, and in the Persian culture, those horns would have been symbolic of power and royalty. All right, the state religion, Zoroastrianism of the Persian Empire, often depicted horned animals. Okay, so that would have been a combination, because that was their gods. So that would have been a combination of power and of divinity and royalty. So we've got, in my opinion, why God chooses a ram with horns. I mean, because God could have chosen anything, all right? But this is going to represent the Persian Empire, all right? Again, covered some of this, not all of it. going to go through it here quickly. Two horns, they're both long, the longer one coming up last. So I told you guys when I was first reading this, this is one of my favorite chapters in the Bible, by the way. When I became a Christian, I really fell in love with history because I was reading all this information and realizing that it was the same history I had studied in school. And I thought, maybe I'm a little slow, but wow, the Bible has the same history. You're like, okay, all right, I'm catching up here. But it's really cool because God, God's recorded this accurately. So when I first pictured these two horns on this ram, but one coming up last, I had this picture of like a rhinoceros horn. Like, what does last mean? Is it behind it? One's longer. Because you get a rhino, it's got two horns and one's longer than the other one, right? And so, but really what you have is it's a pretty normal looking ram and it's got its long horns and they're curling. One's just longer than the other. Okay, but it comes up last because when the Persians and the Medes came together to form this two arms of the statue, it was the Persians that came to dominance and rule later or last. So in verse 4, he says, "I saw the ram budding," which would be a show of power. Okay, it really is amazing how such a skinny-legged, hoofed little animal could really thump you and put you on your backside pretty quick if it wants to lower its head. I mean, they're powerful, okay? You look at them going at it at Yellowstone Park, and it's like, I don't know how they don't get a concussion after that, But so we got a display of power, okay? And so the ram is budding north, south, and west. No other beast could stand before him, nor was there anyone to rescue him from his power, but he did as he pleased and he magnified himself. So he's a pretty proud little ram here. His display of power is going north, south, and west, which is also an accurate representation of the Persian Empire in the direction that it was extending. So move on. Verse 5, while I was looking, behold, a male goat was coming from the west, over the surface of the whole earth without touching the ground, and the goat had a conspicuous horn between his eyes. So now we've got a goat coming from the west, and it's not touching the ground, which lets us know that the goat is coming really fast. So the example I used last week was the Roadrunner cartoon. You know, the Roadrunner is known for being very, very fast, and you never see his feet actually touching the ground when he's, you know, rolling over the plains because he's going so fast. So got this goat coming from the west. Have you turn on over to Isaiah chapter 46. I'll be open to taking some of you guys who have studied this out, some of your comments after class. been trying to kind of maybe peg Isaiah chapter 46 here. When you read in Isaiah about a nation that's coming to execute judgment, that's usually a reference to Babylon. Isaiah being the prophet, is warning God's people that because of their sin and their unwillingness to repent from their sin, that God will punish them and that he is going to bring a nation to destroy them. You see prophecies of God using Assyria to do that to the northern tribes of Israel. And then Isaiah does refer to the oncoming Babylonian captivity of the remaining Judean tribe. So typically when you see a prophecy of a nation coming in judgment, it's talking about Babylon. Now the interesting thing about chapter 44, the end of chapter 44, in Isaiah is that God prophesies the destruction and rebuilding of Jerusalem. Okay? So the destruction of Jerusalem is done at the hands of what empire? Babylon. Then the decree to rebuild is done during the empire, during which empire? Persia. So in the end of chapter 44, God prophesies the destruction and the rebuilding of Jerusalem. In the beginning of chapter 45, King Cyrus is called out by name as the Persian king who will issue the decree that will allow the Jews to rebuild. So that's the context. Okay, so 45 is a prophecy that, and I'll take you guys' feedback after class, but 45 is a prophecy of the coming Persian king. So by the time you get to Isaiah chapter 46, verse 1 says, Bel has bowed down, Nebo stoops over. So who are the two Babylonian kings that we've covered in Daniel? The first one was who? Nebuchadnezzar? Nebuchadnezzar? Why is his name Mr. Nebuchadnezzar? Well, he's named after his god Nebo. Who is the second one? Belshazzar? Any connection to Bel? See, these are the two Babylonian gods. Bel and Nebo. Okay, now they've got thousands, but they kind of classify some as their more main gods. And chapter 46, verse 1, Bel bows down, Nebo stoops over. So what's happening to the gods of the Babylonians? So, you know, the point I'm trying to bring out here is that by the time you get to chapter 46, verse 11, let's do verse 10. Declaring the end from the beginning. See, God likes to do that. Yeah. So that way when these things come about, you can't say your idol brought it about because God declared it before it was going to happen. So in verse 10, declaring the end from the beginning and from the ancient times, things which have not been done, saying, my purpose will be established. And I will accomplish all my good pleasure. Calling a bird of prey from the east, the man of my purpose from a far country, truly I have spoken, truly I will bring it to pass, I have planned it, surely I will do it. So, Right now, as much as I've got it narrowed down, that's talking about the Persian Empire, probably specifically Cyrus himself. Typically, when you read Isaiah, the prophecies of a nation coming from a coming nation usually are prophetic of Babylon, because they would be the nation that would come and enslave the remaining Israelites. Because you understand, a lot of those Israelites fled south into Judah during the Assyrian conquests, and that's how we have 12 tribes of Judah when Jesus is born. If that didn't make sense, you just ask me later. But I find that really interesting, because the context here in Isaiah from chapters 44, 45, all the way through 46 is about the coming Persian Empire. And its king is actually even called out by name. And in chapter 46, 11, it does confirm for us that this nation comes from the east. So how can it bud east? It is east. Doesn't that make sense? So I just wanted to show us this. The ram is budding north, west, and south. Why is the ram not budding east? Because he comes from the east, okay? God prophesied that. So, you know, that's a reference to the Persian Empire there. You guys head back to Daniel chapter 8. So if the ram comes from the east, then the goat comes from the west. Now, I'll actually take an answer here. Pop quiz time, you know. Which kingdom from our studies in Daniel's chapter 2 and 7 follows the kingdom of Persia? One of you guys just yell it out. Greece. Good job. So this goat is going to represent Greece, because the goat is about to destroy the ram. And it's got a horn between its head, conspicuous horn, which would represent its king. First real significant king. You know, it's not like Alexander the Great, you know, started the Greek Empire. Okay? I don't want you to leave class thinking that. The horn does represent Alexander the Great, because Greece was king of nothing. You know, it didn't have anything for a king to rule over until what Alexander the Great did. So, okay. So in verse 5, we've got a male goat coming from the west over the surface of the whole earth without touching the ground. The goat had a conspicuous horn between its eyes. It came up to the ram, which had the two horns, which I had seen standing in front of the canal, and rushed at him in his mighty wrath. I saw him come beside the ram, and he was enraged at him, struck the ram, shattered his two horns, and the ram had no strength to withstand him. So he hurled him to the ground and trampled on him, and there was none to rescue the ram from his power. So there you've got the prophecy of Alexander the Great coming in really quickly, conquers the Persian Empire in under 6 years, and most of the known world in under 10 years. Destroys Persia, its two horns, and becomes the bad guy on the corner. So, really interesting though. We will finish the reign of Belshazzar after chapter 8 by going back to chapter 5. And chapter 5 explains the day that the Babylonians fell, and there'll be some pretty cool little parallels here. So, verse 8 says, the male goat magnified himself exceedingly, but as soon as he was mighty, the large horn was broken, and in its place there came up four conspicuous horns towards the four winds of heaven. So here's where we kind of ended off last week. Okay, a couple things about the goat here then. Seems how we covered the ram. We know that the goat was going quick. What do we have from chapter 7 that agrees with the swiftness of the goat? Do we have anything from chapter 7? See, because if we have Babylon, Persia, Greek, Rome in chapter 2, and Babylon, Persia, Greece, and Rome in chapter 7, then how did chapter 7 communicate the swiftness of the goat? Do we remember that? Does my question make sense? So the prophecy of Greece in Daniel chapter 8 is that he would be fast. So what do we have in chapter 7 that prophesies that the kingdom of Greece would be fast? Say that again, Super Dave. He was a leopard with wings. So leopards, if you go back to chapter 7 here, verse 6, He says, after this, I kept looking, and behold, another one like a leopard. So leopards alone on their own are fast. And then this leopard has on its back four wings of a bird. So that's, you know, that's really moving. That's pretty quick. Okay? The goat strikes the ram in his wrath and tramples him down. And then his horn breaks off, and four more horns grow in its place. Do we have anything from Daniel 7 that also prophesies the four rulers that would split up the kingdom? Aha! Very cool. Keep reading here in chapter 7, verse 6. Leopard on its back, four wings, and the beast had four heads. So we skipped that when we were going through chapter 7 because I knew we were going to get to chapter 8. But even in that picture of the beasts in chapter 7, the leopard does have four heads. That's going to run parallel with the four horns that replace the singular conspicuous horn once the ram is trampled down in the wrath of the goat. Okay? So back to chapter 8 here. So if the conspicuous horn on the goat represents its king and then it breaks off, presumably that king's rule comes to an end. And that's exactly what happens to Alexander the Great right around the, you know, retirement age of 33. Okay? He died suddenly of fever. Now, I'm not saying the guy was really healthy. I'm sure 10 years of war probably wasn't good on the body. But he was also an alcoholic, and that probably wasn't very good for the old body. But he just dies of fever at 33. I don't buy it. Now, how would I know? What do I know? You know, I don't know anything. But the reason why I'm so convicted on it is right after Alexander the Great dies, his brother is murdered. And then after him, all of his sons are killed. And you know how the story goes. Why would somebody start killing all the males that have any kind of birthright to the throne? Because they want the throne. So, coincidentally, after dying at 33 of a fever, which he was very much killed, four generals took the kingdom that he had helped conquer and build and split it among themselves. Do you guys remember their names? Seleucus. Yeah, really good. That was good. I wanted you guys to say them and not me, you know, as you try to pronounce these. But yeah, Lysimachus, Cassander, Ptolemy, and Seleucus. So Ptolemy is going to be that region south. Kind of soaks up the southern region, a little bit of the Arabian Peninsula down into Egypt, Africa, in, you know, into that region. And then Lysimachus is going to be what would become known as Thrace. Okay, Cassander takes the region which then becomes known as Macedonia. And you see Paul's travels in Macedonia in the New Testament. And then Seleucus took the region which would have been a little east, which would have been Syria, north and east, which would have been Syria. So you could recognize these areas, Macedonia, Egypt, Thrace, and Syria. These are all, you know, kind of geographic areas even when Jesus was on earth. So those four commanders take the area that had been conquered and built up as this great kingdom, and then split them up. So definitely see that being prophesied by the four-headed leopard. Okay, so really good. Okay, well, chapter 8 here, jump ahead to verse 20. The way that we went through this was we actually have the interpretation of the dream in verse 20. Now, what I wanted to do is, because maybe not all of us here have gone through this, and maybe some have gone through it, but didn't realize the four-headed leopard was significant, but knew about the wings, I wanted us to go through it, apply some logic, because we had just spent so much time in Daniel 2 and in Daniel 7. Like, let's take what we've done and learned and see if we can maybe piece this together in a way that makes sense. And hopefully what I showed you was, as we did, it made sense, and it agreed with the scriptures. Because then we're going to come to the interpretation here. Verse 20 says, the ram which you saw with the two horns represents the kings of Media and Persia. Okay, we got that right. Two horns, one's longer, the other one comes up last. Verse 21, the shaggy goat represents the kingdom of Greece, and the large horn that's between his eyes is the first king. Okay, so there is Greece and Alexander the Great. Verse 22, the broken horn and the four horns that arose in its place represent four kingdoms which will arise from his nation, although not with his power. Well, yeah. Them four generals aren't the reason why Persia got destroyed in less, you know, just under 6 years. That was because of Alexander the Great. Okay, so they're going to take the spoils of war, but it wasn't because of their power. Okay, so the interpretation of the dream is there. And we were able to kind of comb out some extra details as well. So, that's going to be history. The only thing the Bible tells us is that the four kingdoms will arise from that horn. No. That's exactly how it plays out historically. Mm-hmm. There's a little bit in chapter 11, but...
So your statement prompted a question in my head when it said on power here, rescue to the ram from its power. It kind of leads me to believe that Alexander may have had some supernatural, because those were records that he broke during that time. And then when you look this word up, it goes all the way back to Moses' time and the power of Pharaoh and the magicians and all that stuff. So do you have, since you study Alexander the Great, I didn't know if you had an opinion on that kind of help or not.
I never have.
Okay.
Yeah. Wish I had more for you, Mark, but I've never looked into that anything more than just his savviness and his greatness at being a war general. As far as if we got any more information, we'd have to get it from outside sources, and I've never seen or read anything that would confirm that. So,
looking at the word.
Yeah, I haven't. Sorry. Okay, any other comments here? Because I'm going to shift gears. Want to get into some of the rest of this vision. If you've ever tried to show somebody that the Bible is indeed the Word of God and that you can prove it, you've read this. Now, there's more to this vision than the ram and the goat, though, and sometimes that's kind of easy to forget. So I want us to back up here, chapter 8 to verse 9, because this vision doesn't stop with the horn being replaced by the four horns. It's going to give us more historical prophecy about what happens after the four horns. Okay? So, go ahead.
Yeah, I was just going to say, in light of Mark's comment on Alexander, I think the New Testament, Romans chapter 9, gives us some good insight in verse 22, where it says, what if God, although willing to demonstrate his wrath and make his power known, endured with much patience vessels of wrath prepared for destruction, and he did so to make the riches of his glory known among vessels of mercy which he prepared for and for glory. Even us.
God God gave Nebuchadnezzar dominion, authority, and power, right? So he can do what he needs in order to bring about his will. I think Romans there is kind of largely talking to maybe the comment that Jesus said, that I did not come to judge the world but to save it. If Jesus wanted to, he could demonstrate his power and he could judge the world. But he instead endures vessels of wrath, right? The Pharisees, you know, and those who are killing him, the Romans, in order to bring salvation for the vessels of mercy. So, okay, Daniel chapter 8, verse 9. Let's read the remainder of the vision here. Out of one of them, so this is going to be the four horns on the shaggy goat, right? Out of the four horns, out of one of them, came a rather small horn, which grew exceedingly great towards the south, toward the east, and toward the beautiful land. Does anybody have a different word there for beautiful land? You just yell it out.
Pleasant.
What? Pleasant land?
Yeah, glorious.
Glorious is a good translation. Nothing else, huh? Okay. I was just curious about that. Verse 10, it grew up to the host of heaven. Uh-oh. You know, that's never good. You know. when something's able to try to reach the height of heaven, that's always a bad sign. Okay. Caused some of the host and some of the stars to fall to the earth, and it trampled them down. It even magnified itself to be equal with the commander of hosts. Okay, this is not good. And it removed the regular sacrifice from him. See, the translators are doing a really good job here with the pronouns. And place of his sanctuary was thrown down. And on account of the transgression, the host will be given over to the horn, along with the regular sacrifice, and it will fling truth to the ground and perform its will and prosper. Then I heard a holy one speaking, and another holy one said to the particular one who was speaking, how long will the vision about the regular sacrifice apply while the transgression causes horror so as to allow both the holy place and the host to be trampled? And he said to me, 2,300 evenings and mornings, and the holy place will be properly restored. When I, Daniel, had seen the vision, I sought to understand it, and behold, standing before me was one who looked like a man. And I heard the voice of the man between the banks of the Ulai, and he called out and said, Gabriel, give this man an understanding of the vision. So he came near where I was standing, and when he came, I was frightened. I fell on my face, and he said to me, son of man, understand that the vision pertains to the time of the end. Okay. Oh, that makes sense, right? You guys got it? This is a little more difficult to comb through. And I have left myself 5 minutes. So, let's start working here. Here's the first important thing we got to understand. Verse 9. Out of the four horns, these are the four horns on the goat that replaced the one horn, right? Will come another rather small horn. Lesson number one, do not confuse this horn with the horn that we just spent a couple weeks studying in chapter 7. Well, what horn was that, Mr. Tool? Okay. Well, you remember that in chapter 7 there were four beasts. The fourth beast was dreadful and terrifying and had 10 horns. From that beast came a small horn, and that horn came up, uttered blasphemous things against God, and waged war with the saints until the Ancient of Days came and executed judgment on that horn. And we spent weeks covering that. Okay? That is how Satan wars against the church today. Okay? And that horn is it's uttering blasphemous things against God. It's any Antichrist teaching that has arisen since the establishment of the church. That horn was a chip off of which kingdom? Chapter 7. Spent weeks covering it. Say it. I just can't hear you. The fourth? Yes. Which was Rome. The horn from chapter 7 comes from the fourth kingdom, the fourth beast, which is Rome. So, Rome is ruling. Jesus is born under the days of the Roman kings. Jesus defeats death and the devil. From there, the little horn, that's an extension of the fourth kingdom, then goes on during the church age to wage war with the church. This horn comes from, in Daniel chapter 8, comes off of which kingdom? First, second, third, fourth. It's the third. Because the first kingdom is Babylon, as at least in the way that these are laid out in chapters 2 and 7. The first kingdom is Babylon. The second one is Persia. And we just saw a vision where Persia is no more and now Greece is ruling. The goat, which represents Greece, its horn, which is king, is broken off and four horns replace it. It's four horns on the kingdom of Greece. From one of those horns, chapter 9 said, will arise a smaller horn. Why is it smaller? Because it's not one of the four. It wasn't the commander. It wasn't the general. It wasn't the original. Okay? He thought himself to be a pretty mighty powerful horn, but he was not. Okay? So just understand. Chapter 8, little horn comes from the goat, which is Greece. Chapter 7, little horn, waging war with the saints, okay, came from Rome. Which is why you always hear me saying Rome didn't cease to exist. It just morphed into a church. And how do I know it? Follow the money. Where did all the gold from the Roman Empire go? It's in the church, at the Vatican. Okay? So that's the first thing that we need to make sure that we understand. Okay? So verse 9 says, out of one of them came forth a rather small horn, which grew exceedingly toward the south, toward the east, and toward the beautiful land. We also have an interpretation of this vision. Go ahead and jump forward to verse 23. So do you guys see how this chapter is working? If you look at verse 22, the horn broke, four horns arose in its place, represents the four kingdoms which will arise in its nation, although not with its power. That was the four horns of the goat, right? We read that. Now, verse 23, in a latter period of their rule, see, that makes sense. From one of those four horns later, when the transgressors have run their course, a king will arise, insolent and skilled in intrigue. You guys see that? So he's explaining to us, yes, this little horn in verse 9 that came from one of the original four horns is just another king that comes, sometime later. He's from the four horns. He's a part of the nation of Greece. Okay? He's going to come. Now, there's some interesting things here that we don't really have time to go over. I think what I'll leave you with, if you guys want to look into anything, is in verse 23, he says, in a later period of their rule, so of the lineage of the four generals, okay, when the transgressors have run their course. So somebody is transgressing God. Okay? And its transgressors are going to run their course. A king will arise, and he's going to be insolent. Okay? Which means, stubborn and disillusioned. Okay? Now, if you go back to verse 9, we say, out of them came a small horn, grows exceedingly. We'll explain why he's going southeast and towards the beautiful land. But then jump down to verse 12. And this horn is doing all kinds of wild things. It's elevating itself to heaven, and it's even challenging the commander of the heaven's army, God himself. So this horn's not up to any good. Now look at verse 12. And on account of transgression, the host will be given over to the horn. So initially, the transgressors are not the horn. The horn is allowed to come to the transgressors because of their transgressions. Just want you to see that. And then maybe you guys figure out what's going on. But, okay, so this vision continues after the ram and the goat. The thing that we saw today is that from the four horns, there is another prophecy about a king that would arise from one of those lineages. It's going to be the Seleucus Empire. And then we're going to see how he continues to wage war against God's people. And that's the remaining of the vision. And we'll finish it next week. It's a really cool one. Thanks for your attention.